That's what I'm talking about. VOA Weather Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, school leaders around the United States are planning for the possibility of more distance learning in the next school year. William Chip Sutterth III is a spokesperson for Durham, North Carolina schools. School buildings there have been closed since last March. Sutterth said, "We have no illusions that COVID will be eradicated by the time the start of the school year comes up." U.S. President Joe Biden has said that reopening schools is a top goal for the country. School administrators say a reopening plan requires careful consideration. They note complications such as the spread of new versions of the COVID-19 virus and vaccination campaigns for teachers. Many parents are demanding that schools fully reopen. Others say they will not feel safe sending children back until vaccines are available to even young students. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the government's top public health expert, said last month the Biden administration hopes to begin vaccinating children by late spring or early summer. By then, school systems will be preparing for the next school year.
Brian Woods is head of Northside Independent School District, a large school system in Texas. He said at least part of next year will be affected by the coronavirus because children won't have access to the vaccine, or at least many won't. Educators there have been using a complex mix of in-person and online teaching. They often are teaching two groups of students at the same time. Woods said changes in the new year might ease that situation by splitting staffing or changing teacher work times. He added the district may change to all online learning for students who have moved on permanently from traditional school. California's West Contra Costa Unified School District is planning a new K-12 virtual academy for 2021-22. A school system statement explained it this way: "One thing that we have learned during the pandemic is that teaching and learning is now different, and it will not fully be what we used to think was normal ever again."
The change to distance learning last March kept the public school system operational in America. But concern continues to grow about the effects of distance learning on racial fairness, performance, attendance, and the overall well-being of U.S. school children. In Durham, North Carolina, officials announced last month that public schools there would continue the distance learning operation through the end of the current school year. Biden has ordered the U.S. Department of Education to provide evidence-based guidance and advice to schools to safely operate in-person learning. Eva Moskowitz is the head of Success Academy Charter Schools. The 47 schools have 20,000 students in New York City. She said, I'm hoping that we don't have to do hybrid, but I don't want to be in a position where we haven't thought it all through. Success Academy students have been receiving online instruction on school-provided computers since the beginning of the school year. Moskowitz plans to end the current school year on May 28th. The 2021-22 school year will then begin August 2nd, possibly using both in-person and online instruction. I honestly don't know what the chances are of continuing distance learning into the next school year, she said.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has promised that schools in the nation's largest school district are going to be back full strength in September. Everyone wants to be back, he added. Michael Mulgrew is the president of the United Federation of Teachers, which works to protect the rights of teachers in New York City public schools. He says it is too soon to reopen schools. Schools currently are providing some in-person classes to elementary and pre-K students who want them. But middle and high schools are online only after reopening for a time in the fall. It's a goal of mine, but I can't say they're going to open, Mulgrew said. This is not about what you want. This is about what you can do safely. Mulgrew said it will take more than teacher vaccines to open schools fully and safely. He noted that scientists are not yet clear on whether vaccinated people might still be able to spread the virus, even if they are not sickened themselves. And Mulgrew wonders how comfortable families will feel about having unvaccinated students begin the new year unvaccinated. This is where it gets tough. So how do you say you're opening in September when we need to get these questions answered? He asked. I'm Brian Lynn.
The Netherlands is currently experiencing a deep winter freeze. The extremely cold temperatures have led many Dutch people to take part in a favorite winter activity, ice skating on frozen canals and other waterways. This popular outdoor activity is giving people a welcome break from life in a pandemic. However, the excitement has also created problems for officials trying to enforce social distancing rules. Ice skating is a national winter obsession in the Netherlands. The country is made up of many canals, rivers, and lakes. Skaters of all ages happily welcome the Arctic conditions that permit them to safely skate over these waterways. In recent years, Dutch speed skaters have won many major international races, including at the Olympic Games. These successes have only added to the national obsession. The 11 Cities Tour is a popular long-distance ice skating race. When the weather is cold enough, the event is held in the northern part of the country, in an area called Friesland. However, the country continues to be under stay-at-home orders to control the spread of the new coronavirus. So this year, the famous race may not happen. The website Holland.com explains the history of the race. In 1890, a group of about 100 men and women created a special challenge: ice skating along the frozen waterways to all Frisian cities in one day. And that is how a new ice skating tradition began. However, for the event to happen, the temperatures need to be low enough for long enough. Because of this, the 11 cities tour has only taken place 15 times since 1890. The last time it happened was in 1997. An estimated 2 million people came to Frieslande to watch thousands of skaters take part. Reporters came from all over the world to cover the event. Last month, the group that organizes the 11 Cities Tour announced that under the current coronavirus measures, it is not possible to organize the popular national event. On February 9th, the chairman of the group poured more cold water on people's hopes. In other words, he explained why it was extremely unlikely that the event could be held this year. Chairman Vibe Wieling described the large event to national broadcaster NOS. "We're talking about a tour with 1 to 1.5 million spectators, about 25,000 skaters, and thousands of volunteers. Half of the Netherlands," he said, "will be on the road. Every right-thinking person," he added, "will realize that something like that is not possible during the pandemic." On February 8th, Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte commented on the issue. He said skating officials could consider permitting races on natural ice if the country's top 120 racers enter a coronavirus bubble. But he too said that producing an event with such a large number of people was unlikely to happen, even if it is outdoors. Still, Rutte said Dutch people should enjoy the wintry conditions while they last. "Enjoy this beautiful weather and the ice," Rutte said, "but do that within the COVID-19 rules." The country's many canals are expected to soon be frozen solid and be safe enough for people to skate on. Officials in Amsterdam have closed locks and banned boats on parts of the city's ring of canals. This will give them a better chance of freezing over. However, Amsterdam city officials also reminded skaters to follow social distancing rules and other coronavirus pandemic measures. They said pandemic rules for public places also need to be followed on the ice. I'm Anna Mateo.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus.
If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Growing tensions in Europe and Asia created a serious conflict for Americans during the 1930s. Most Americans opposed the fascist or military leaders gaining control in Germany, Italy, Japan, and other countries. But they were not willing to take any firm action to stop this growing movement. Americans did not want to become involved in another world war, and they called on President Franklin Delano Roosevelt and their representatives in Congress to remain neutral in world affairs. But aggression by Germany and Japan finally would force Americans to choose between their love of democracy and their desire for peace. The first challenge to America's policy of neutrality came in October 1935. Troops from fascist Italy invaded Ethiopia. Roosevelt did not feel neutral at all. He told his advisors, "Italy is dropping bombs on Ethiopia, and that is war." He sharply criticized the fascist Italian leader Benito Mussolini. Roosevelt issued an order banning Americans from sending arms to either Italy or Ethiopia, and he called on Americans not to send oil or other materials to Italy. Roosevelt's efforts to stop the export of oil and other products did not succeed. But the efforts by the White House played an important part in leading the League of Nations to take economic actions against Italy. Less than 2 years later, civil war broke out in Spain. Spanish fascists led by General Francisco Franco tried to overthrow the democratic government in Madrid. Some Americans went to join the Democratic Army in Spain to fight Franco. But Roosevelt and the Congress agreed that America should remain officially neutral in the conflict. In this way, Roosevelt was meeting the wishes of the American people by avoiding war. But personally, he was deeply troubled by the events in Europe. In a letter to his ambassador in France, Roosevelt wrote, "One cannot help feeling that the whole European situation is blacker than at any time in your lifetime or mine." Another challenge to American neutrality came in Asia. Japan launched a new invasion of China in July 1937. Within 1 month, Japanese forces gained control of what was then called Peking, now Beijing, and Tianjin. The United States had long supported the nationalist forces of China, and many Americans were angry about the Japanese invasion. But Roosevelt and his administration once again refused to take strong actions against the aggression. For one thing, the American Navy was weak. There was little it could do to stop Japanese aggression thousands of miles away in Asia. And neither Roosevelt nor the Congress wanted to be the first to break America's official policy of neutrality. Franklin Roosevelt made clear in private talks with friends that he understood the serious threat to world peace created by Adolf Hitler and other fascists. He believed that the United States could not remain neutral forever if democracy was threatened in so many countries. However, Roosevelt did little to educate the nation about this threat. Instead, he generally followed the wishes of the majority of people who wanted America to remain neutral. Public opinion in the United States was strongly against any kind of involvement in foreign conflicts. In 1937, Roosevelt made an important speech calling for the world's neutral nations to protect themselves from lawless fascist nations. But many Americans feared that Roosevelt was trying to create a new alliance, and they opposed his efforts. A public opinion survey at the time showed that less than one in three Americans was willing to change the nation's strong neutrality laws to give Roosevelt more freedom of action. In the same year, Japanese planes sank an American gunboat in the Yangtze River in China. But few Americans showed any interest in going to war over the incident. Instead, they accepted Japanese apologies. Americans simply had no desire to fight. Most Americans honestly believed that the best hope for their country was neutrality. One of the most influential supporters of neutrality was Senator Gerald Nye of North Dakota. He told the New York Times in 1937 that there can be no objection to any action the government may take which tries to bring peace to the world. But that action, he added, must not tie the American people into another world death march. He said, "I very much fear that we are once again being caused to feel that the call is upon America to police a world that chooses to follow insane leaders." Adolf Hitler's Nazi forces moved into the Rhineland in 1936. 2 years later, they invaded Austria. And then, in the following months, Hitler began making demands on the government of Czechoslovakia. Britain's Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain was afraid that Hitler might start a general European war if he was blocked from gaining control of Czechoslovakia. In September of 1938, Chamberlain traveled to Munich to discuss the situation with the German leader. The result was that Britain agreed to a German takeover of Czechoslovakia. Chamberlain returned to London, promising peace in our time.
The settlement of the Czechoslovakian problem, which has now been achieved, is, in my view, only the prelude to a larger settlement in which all Europe may find peace. This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. Some of you perhaps have already heard what it contains, but I would just like to read it to you. We, the German Führer and Chancellor, and the British Prime Minister have had a further meeting today and are agreed in recognizing that the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
The first reaction of most Americans to Chamberlain's Munich agreement was one of relief. But then public opinion changed. Americans saw that Hitler's Germany now had control of Central Europe. Japan was becoming more powerful in Asia. Chamberlain's weakness only served to show dictators that they could gain land and power through aggression and fear. Roosevelt warned Americans in late 1938 about this fascist threat. "There can be no peace," he said, "if another nation makes the threat of war its national policy."
There can be no peace if national policy adopts as a deliberate instrument the threat of war. There can be no peace if national policy adopts as a deliberate instrument the dispersion all over the world of millions of helpless and persecuted wanderers with no place to lay their heads. There can be no peace if humble men and women are not free to think their own thoughts, to express their own feelings, and to worship God. There can be no peace if economic resources that ought to be devoted to social and economic reconstruction are to be diverted to an intensified competition in armaments.
Roosevelt and much of the American public continued to hope that the United States could stay out of foreign conflicts. But increasingly they understood that war might come, and they began to prepare for possible hostilities. Following the Munich Agreement, Roosevelt requested a large increase in the defense budget. He asked Britain and France to buy arms from American manufacturers to give those companies more experience in producing weapons. And he helped bring about an agreement among nations in North and South America to join together to oppose fascist threats to peace and security. Finally, Roosevelt tried to get Congress to change the neutrality laws. He wanted more freedom as president to resist fascist aggression and help Britain, France, China, and other friendly nations. Congress, however, continued to resist such changes. But events in early 1939 showed that war was on the way. Germany occupied Czechoslovakia and then Lithuania. Franco's forces took control in Spain. Italy invaded Albania. And then Hitler began making demands on Poland. In August, Germany and the Soviet Union announced to the world that they had signed a non-aggression agreement. A week later, Germany attacked Poland. Two days later, Britain and France declared war on Germany. Germany's invasion of Poland and the beginning of the war presented a giant challenge to the United States. On the one hand, almost all Americans supported the European democracies opposing the aggression by Hitler, Mussolini, and other fascists. But on the other hand, Americans had no desire to fight in what might be a long and bloody war. The following months would force Americans of all political beliefs to consider this problem. It would be a final period of peace for the United States before events once again drew it into a terrible world conflict.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.